I love to adventure. I've been to almost all 50 states. I've seen my fair share of diversity within nature and people. My main reason for travel is to explore the wilderness. Sometimes I will backpack in the Rocky Mountains, drive through national parks, and then drive through the desert. Growing up on the East Coast, I didn't get to experience the desert much. So I tend to favor the desert drive over the mountainous drive. I've been doing this for a couple of years now, and I haven't experienced anything too odd in the desert other than the sheer feeling of loneliness. My favorite time to drive through the desert is at night, because the stars majestically illuminate the terrain. About a month ago, however, I saw more than just sand and stars on this particular drive. I was driving through the desert in Arizona. Nightfall was closing in on me, which was one of the best times. The sunset across the desert brought me to a whole new place. Sometimes I would even camp out in my car, because in a sense, I loved how alone I was out there. Normally I would bring my dog with me, but my parents were in town, so I was all alone this time. Again, with nightfall approaching, I didn't know whether I should camp out or keep driving home. I figured my parents would want to see me, and I was only about an hour from the house. So I continued through the quickly darkening desert. If any of you have ever been through the desert in Arizona, you would know that you occasionally see horses and other animals along the side of the road. So seeing figures on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere isn't anything out of the ordinary. About 45 minutes from my house, my high beams pick up on a different figure. It looked like a person. Being the generous person that I am, I pulled over to see if anything was wrong. As I approached, I noticed the person wasn't moving at all. They were just sitting upright. They didn't seem to notice that I was even there. His head never turned. "Are you okay?" There was no answer, no acknowledgement that I had said anything. The man was poorly dressed, rather pale, but surprisingly clean-shaven. He was oddly skinny, though, and the more I focused on him, the more I realized how abnormally skinny he was. "I was driving by and noticed you. I wanted to make sure that you were okay." Still nothing. He was staring straight at the ground. I sat there awkwardly for a couple of seconds, until I finally saw his jaw move.
"I need some water."
His voice was deep. It didn't sound like a person. I can't quite explain it, but his voice just sounded off.
"Okay, man, let me grab you some out of my car."
I walked to the passenger door and reached for my bottle of water. Before I could even reach it, though, I just sensed that something was off. I jolted my head where the man was sitting. He was gone. I was now panicking. I didn't know where he went to. I closed the passenger door and took a quick look around. I heard movement from behind a rock about 10 to 20 feet off the road. A man came out from behind the rock, but it was not the same man. This guy looked absolutely nuts, and he was holding something in his hand. He started running towards me. I then jumped into my car and took off down the road. As I looked into my rearview mirror, I realized that there was more of them, maybe five or six, all emerging from behind the rocks right off the road. They were all staring at me as I sped off. I had no intention of slowing down. In fact, I would have been happy if I got pulled over by a cop. Within 3 to 4 minutes of that happening, I felt relaxed enough to play some music. I took one last glance into my rearview mirror. My blood then turned to ice. I was in complete shock when I saw the man who I had offered the water to sitting in my back seat, just staring at me. His eyes. They weren't looking at me. They were looking into me. I, of course, then slammed on my brakes, still in too much shock to make any noise. I couldn't take my eyes off of him. He then started to smile. The look of death was on his face.
"Soon, you will be one of us,"
he stated as he lifted up his knife. I jolted out of my car, and as soon as I did, I could hear my back door opening up.
This man was very fast, inhumanly fast, and I knew that I wouldn't be able to outrun him for long.
"Are you ready?"
the deep voice said as he quickly approached me. It was now completely dark out. I had no clue where to go. It was over, or so I thought. There were headlights approaching us. At this point, I was a couple hundred feet from my car. I didn't hear the man behind me anymore. I waved down the car that was approaching me. Thank God the driver saw me and stopped. After explaining to the man what happened, he tried calling the police, but sadly, there was no signal. His name was Mark, and he agreed to follow me home just in case anything else happened. He also had a pistol on him, which really made me feel safe. After about 35 minutes of driving with Mark behind me the whole way, I finally made it back home. After thanking him, I went to go check the back seat of the car to see if my stuff was still there, or if the man had left anything. Luckily, everything was still there. I did, however, notice a sheet of paper on the top of my backpack. I took it and opened it up.
"You aren't safe. You will soon be one of us,"
the note read. A chill ran through my body. I was startled by the sound of footsteps in front of my car and jolted up.
"The dog threw up,"
my mom said, standing right in front of my car. I went back inside. I didn't say anything to my parents. They probably wouldn't have believed me anyway. I figured that I would call the police and let them know what happened after they left.
"Oh yeah, some guy stopped by looking for you about 20 minutes ago."
"Who?" I asked.
"I don't know, it was some skinny guy with a really deep voice. He didn't talk much, but he did give me this letter to give to you, so here. But try to find more normal friends, please."
My heart was racing. As soon as my parents left, I opened it.
"We know where you live,"
the letter read. My heart sank. After calling the cops and explaining everything, they investigated it for a while. But sadly, they found no sign of people along the section of road I was on. I gave them the letter for DNA testing, but I still haven't heard anything back. I installed a security system to my house and haven't had any problems since. And I hope to God it stays that way. There is a single stretch of I-70 in Utah between Salina and Green River, over 100 miles with no services, no hotels, no restaurants or gas stations of any kind. There are only some viewing areas where you can pull off the road. It's a hell of a drive, and don't get me wrong. Those Utah mountains are stunning in the daytime, and at night, you have one of the clearest views of the stars you can find. But 100 miles is a long way to go, especially at night. Anyone who has driven that stretch of interstate can tell you, it's not very busy, even during the day. Approaching dusk, traffic becomes even more scarce. And by the time the middle of the night rolls around, you can drive for miles and miles and not see headlights from another car. And don't even get me started on cell service out there. Definitely not a place you want to be stuck in, especially at night. The thought of breaking down out there on a dark night with no one around for miles is enough to give anyone second thoughts about attempting the drive. Unfortunately for me, I was in a hurry, so I decided to go for it. A little backstory. I'm originally from a city called Lincoln in Nebraska, mostly known for the college sports team, the Cornhuskers. I was born and raised there. I lived there up until I was about 25, and then I decided that since I was single, with no kids, that now was the time to get out there and explore. So I accepted a job in LA and moved out west. Most of my family still lives in Lincoln, so I try to go back and visit every once in a while. This particular Sunday, I got a call from my mom around 2 p.m. My grandpa, who had been in a nursing home since he had a stroke, was getting a lot worse. They didn't expect him to make it to the end of the week. So if I wanted to go and see him, I should do so sooner rather than later. Unfortunately, I was out of a job, but this meant that I had the time to go and see him. Last-minute flights can be rather expensive, so I decided to drive. I had made the drive before. It certainly wasn't fun, but it was a much cheaper option, and I figured I should try and drive all the way through. And luckily for me, I had gotten my car serviced a couple of weeks prior. 2 hours later, I was packed up and on the road with my dog, Chance. It was a pretty uneventful drive for the most part. Daylight faded, and I remember being disappointed that I would be driving through Utah and most of Colorado at night, and I would miss out on the beautiful scenery. I love looking at the stars, but it's hard to enjoy them when you're driving 80 miles per hour. And since I was in a hurry, I wouldn't be stopping to get a better look. So I resigned myself to just singing loudly to keep myself awake. We've all been there, right? A little after midnight, I finally got to Salina, Utah. I passed the billboard that warned motorists of what's to come. No service for 110 miles. It's paid for by the city of Salina, and it's a good thing too. According to the gas station attendants, several times each week someone comes walking up to the building because they ran out of gas. So I stopped and filled up, and was immediately back on the road. It had snowed recently, the roads were clear, but there was still snow shoveled off to the sides. Now, I'm the kind of driver that speeds everywhere I go. The speed limit on this particular stretch of road is usually around 80 miles per hour, so I'm typically going about 90, except on the steep grades, which there are plenty. I've been driving about 30 minutes at this point. I had passed a few cars several miles back, but they're too far gone to even see their headlights. Have you ever driven on a road alone late at night and just marveled at how dark it actually is and how alone you actually are? Sometimes when I'm on a drive like that and I get to a long stretch of road, I like to turn my headlights off as I'm driving, just for a few seconds, just to see how it really looks when there's almost no light around. It's almost cathartic. Suddenly, as I'm driving, I hear a loud pop and the car jerks right, or maybe it was left. I can't remember. My low tire pressure indicator is flashing, and I slam on the brakes after I straighten out the car. I pull over to the side of the road and put on my emergency lights. Chance is going nuts. I've blown out a tire before, so I already know what to expect as I step out of the car. My right front tire is completely flat, and I tried to examine the tire more closely to see what actually happened, but even with the flashlight on my iPhone, it's still too dark to see. I check my phone, and of course, there's no cell service. I roll down the rear passenger window so Chance can stick his head out and get some fresh air while I replace the tire. I get to work, grumbling under my breath that, of course, I'm just about halfway to Green River, and I'll have to go the rest of the way on my spare tire, which would significantly slow me down. I remove the spare tire and the jack from the trunk, and went to go get started. As I made my way back up to the front of my car, I froze. Someone was walking towards me, their silhouette barely visible at the very edge of my headlights. Chance didn't make a sound. They continued walking until they were about 30 feet away from my car. I couldn't make out any distinct features. They were just tall, 6'5", maybe 6'6". At this point, no cars had passed me going east since I had pulled over. So after the initial shock of seeing another person, my first thought was, where did this person come from? They just stood there, unmoving, staring at us. Chan still didn't make a sound, but he was now staring at the figure ahead like I was. I won't lie, I was scared shitless. Who was this person? Where did they come from? And why were they just staring at me? Why isn't Chance barking at them like he does everything else that moves? I put down my spare tire and hesitantly asked, "Hello?" I was still hoping that my eyes were playing tricks on me. No response. They didn't move a muscle. It was under 10 degrees and they weren't even shivering. "Hello?" I asked again, a little louder this time. At this point, I'm starting to wonder if this person requires assistance more than I do. I open my mouth to speak again, when I finally hear something. "Do you need help?" the man faintly asked me. For the first time, I can tell that it was a man, based on his voice. It wasn't as deep as you might expect from a man his size, which struck me as odd, but he still hadn't moved. "Where did you come from?" I asked.
"I didn't see any taillights in front of me, and no one has passed me since I pulled over. How long have you been out here?"
I started walking towards the front of my car slowly, the tire iron clenched firmly in my hand. The man made no visible movements, but again he said,
"Do you need help?"
I stopped walking and tried to get a better look. I couldn't make out any physical features, but I could tell he wasn't dressed for winter. I was in sweatpants, a winter jacket, and was still freezing, but here was this man wearing a short-sleeved shirt. He kept his face pointing down the whole time. At this point, I'm really starting to freak out.
"Do you need help?"
This time, his voice sounded all wrong, as if he was struggling with each word. I started inching my way around the front of my car, to the driver's side door. If nothing else, I could get in my car and lock the doors. I still had my tire iron, but I never thought of myself as a physically impressive person, and I knew that if it came down to it, this tire iron may not help me overcome the difference in stature. He spoke again.
"Do you need help? Do you need help? Do you need help?"
His voice becoming more urgent, he finally takes a step towards me, still repeating,
"Do you need help? Do you need help?"
He was speaking faster. I quickly moved around the car and found the driver's door handle. Just as I'm about to pull it open, a light appears behind me. I instinctively turn around to see a pair of headlights coming my way down the interstate. Chan starts barking loud. I whip back around, expecting to see the man closing in on me. But he was gone. Chance was still barking.
"Hello?"
I yell out, but there was nothing. No breathing, no movement, no response. I stood there for a couple of seconds, unsure of what was happening. The car coming down the highway passes me. They don't stop. I can't blame them. Would you stop for a random car on the side of a desolate road? I didn't even think about waving them down. I was still trying to process what happened. Did I imagine that whole thing? I walk ahead, approaching the area where the man was standing. There was footprints in the snow. They began where the man was standing, stretching into the distance down the road. I still held my tire iron. I turned on the flashlight on my phone and followed the footsteps. They went for about 10 feet, then turned. They went right off the road to the south and disappeared. Now, I'm not stupid enough to go following footsteps through the Utah wilderness in the middle of the night, but damn it, I was curious. More headlights coming up from behind me brought me back to my senses. I went back to my car, changed the tire, and was back on my way, albeit at a much slower pace. The rest of the trip was as uneventful as the beginning, and I didn't feel the need to mention the encounter to anyone. Sure, it was freaky, but I still wasn't altogether convinced that I didn't imagine the whole thing. It was late, and I had been driving for almost 9 hours straight. But I will tell you one thing for sure, I definitely don't want to drive that way again to find out.
So my trucking route is from here in Connecticut all the way down to Kentucky and Tennessee. It's a pretty good run. I get to see pretty much all the sights the East Coast has to offer, but there's one area of the country that gets pretty wild, and that's the area around the Appalachian Mountains. You guys probably know that it's one of the poorest areas of the country, one that got really screwed over as the coal mining jobs started to dwindle and the local economy went down the pooper. I really feel for the people down there. Seeing how entrenched in poverty some of the families are is just heartbreaking. So I was rolling through an area of the state that I hadn't previously been through, thanks to my usual section of highway being blocked off by some huge traffic accident that had unfortunately left a few people dead. It was having some trouble navigating the roads after my phone ran out of battery, and wouldn't you know it, the plug charger decides to give out too. Worst timing ever. But I was an experienced truck driver, and I wasn't driving on an 18-wheeler on that particular run, so I was free to take some of the smaller roads to find my way around. but despite the fact that I consider myself pretty good on the roads, there was a point that I found myself hopelessly lost, and I started to worry that I wouldn't make my shipping delivery deadline. That would mean disciplinary proceedings and whatnot, and I just couldn't afford those at all. Anyway, I happen to see this one guy wandering down the side of the road, so I slow my truck, wind down the window, and ask him for directions. The guy seems friendly enough and is more than willing to take a few minutes to give me all the information I need on how to make it back onto the main highways that headed south. But then I start asking him if there's anywhere nearby that I'd be able to get some lunch, as it was getting towards 1 PM and I'd only managed to get myself a pretty meager breakfast. The guy seems to think for a minute, scratching his head, taking an unusually long time to think of an answer to a question that usually takes like seconds to answer. It's rare to be anywhere in West Virginia where there isn't a Cracker Barrel within a few miles, so why he didn't just point me in the direction of one of those was beyond me. When I pressed him, he told me he knew of an old family-run place that did the best chicken fried steak in the entire county, maybe even the state. Suddenly, all was forgiven. I might be a northerner, but I'll be darned if I turned down a good chicken fried steak. All that was taking so long was for him to try and remember the best way there that wouldn't take me down some run-down old dirt road, one which might get my truck stuck on it, which really would have left me screwed. So after a minute, he gives me some pretty detailed directions towards an old strip mall. He told me it was mostly abandoned, but that restaurant was still there, along with a few other small businesses, and not to pay any mind if the place seemed quiet during lunch, as it did the majority of its business in the early to late evening. I was happy enough, thanked the guy, then set off following the directions he'd given me. It took me a little while to find the old strip mall the guy was talking about. It was honestly a little frustrating to drive past a couple of chain restaurants and whatnot, given that I was so hungry. But man, if I wasn't craving some of that country-style chicken fried steak, and if it was a family-run place, then all the better. That chain restaurant stuff just doesn't cut it compared to a real home-style cooking. But eventually I actually find this run-down old strip mall the guy seemed to be talking about, and it was little wonder the place was in such a state of disrepair. It was way off any highway. There was absolutely no signage for it, literally nothing to let anyone know it was there. But even worse, I saw zero indication that there was any kind of restaurant open in any of the units. I wasn't about to give up so easily though, as I did see one place that had a big old sign over it saying something like Mama J's Country Kitchen or some variation on that, so my hopes were restored. That's when I see a guy open up the door of the place, stepping out into the afternoon heat and staring over at my truck. I gave him away from the driver's side, overjoyed that I was finally about to get some decent food on what had been a long, lonely drive from Connecticut. I figured he hadn't seen me do it, that the sun was obscuring his vision or something just because he continued to stare back at me. Anyway, I get out of my truck, lock the doors, and start walking over to the restaurant. I call out to the guy like halfway across the parking lot, asking if they were indeed open for business. Again, the guy doesn't react. He just keeps staring at me in a way that I now notice is distinctly unwelcoming. Something in my gut just told me to stop walking. I had this creeping feeling all over my body, like something was telling me that something was horribly wrong with this whole setup. And no sooner had I started feeling distinctly vulnerable than the guy reached behind his back, pulls something out of his back pocket, and puts it on his head. I thought it was like a woolly hat at first, but then he pulls it down. It's like a balaclava. Then I notice something else in his hand, a small revolver. I turn and start running back towards the truck, and as I do, I see a few other guys emerging from the derelict units, each running towards my truck to try and cut me off. Each had some kind of weapon in their hand, be it a knife or an iron bar, and seeing those just made me run even faster. Thank God I'd caught in that gut feeling when I did, otherwise they'd have definitely made it to my truck before I did. I threw the door open, jumped inside, and locked the cab behind me, trembling as I rummaged in my pocket for the keys. The bandits surrounded the cab of my truck, hitting the chassis with their weapons, demanding I get out. Then the guy with the gun aimed that thing right at my face through the windshield, screaming for me to get out of the truck. I had no choice but to do what I did. I gunned the engine and plowed the whole bunch of them, knocking down those that didn't jump out of the way in time. I leaned down in my seat as I gripped the wheel out of pure instinct, really, and again, I thank God that I did, because when I hit the guy with the gun, he let loose a single shot that shattered the windshield and struck the seat just above my head. I circled around the parking lot expecting the next shot to come at any moment, but only the bandits that had gotten out of the way of my initial truck charge were chasing me. Two or three were just lying on the concrete, rolling around in pain whilst holding onto their limbs. I think that's about the only thing that saved me, having the presence of mind to just ram them instead of trying to reverse out of there. If that had been my choice, I might not be around to tell you all this. I got out of that parking lot, speeding off blindly in the first direction I could, until I found somewhere to safely park up and call the cops. The sheriff's deputy I spoke to told me to swing on by the department when I was next able to so I could give a statement, and I did so. But not until I actually managed to get myself some lunch, as not even the terror of almost getting hijacked could dull my appetite. I guess that makes me sound pretty fat or whatever, but you guys need to appreciate just how hungry I was. Down at the department, however, I learned that I was not the first truck driver to have run into these bandits, how I'd been just unlucky enough to ask directions from one of their kinfolk who had directed me to the rundown strip mall just before calling his buddies to let them know I'd be there. At least, that's the only conclusion we came to once I described the guy I'd asked directions from. The deputy just seemed to nod knowingly when I related this guy's physical description. I guess I'm just warning you guys to be very, very careful when you're out on the roads. And although it seems like some tired old cautionary tale from your Facebook posting aunt, be careful when you're talking to strangers. There's no way of knowing just who they really are. A couple of years ago, one of my closest friends relocated cross-country with his long-term girlfriend to work a job he couldn't refuse. Only issue he had was that he didn't want to fly his dogs out with him when they made the move, since they'd be staying in a hotel for the first month. He was also a bit reticent to fly them out due to health concerns for both pets. By the time he located a home to rent, he was missing his furry babies and made the request of his sister, another close friend, and myself to drive them to him in LA. Now, we are Chicago folks, so the trip would be a long one. However, with the three of us to foot the near 30-hour drive, it would be a piece of cake. We left early and drove long hours. Along the way, it was decided between my friend and I that we'd foot the majority of the drive ourselves, and if we needed to, we'd let our friend's sister do some driving. We were in a bit of a time crunch due to a snafu with the rental agreement, so we didn't have the luxury to stop very often past an 8-hour stay at a Denver La Quinta Inn. As for the journey itself, it was relatively smooth, barring getting pulled over right before entering Utah for driving 2 miles in the left lane of an empty highway. Whoops. From that point, we made it through Utah, Arizona, and Nevada without much problem until we entered California, in need of gas. I had been driving for the majority of the first day and tagged my buddy in after being pulled over. I remained in the shotgun seat as navigator, searching through the GPS for a fuel stop. We kept our eyes peeled for road signs and discovered a sign pointing to Yermo Ghost Town, or something along those lines, which had a mobile station. How wonderful. It was convenient too, as it wasn't located almost directly off of the interstate. We rolled in on a little more than fumes when we approached the pumps. Normally we'd let the dogs out at every rest stop, but having stopped not long before then, and with both dogs sleeping snugly in the back, I decided to pump gas without anyone else leaving the vehicle. My buddy pulled up on the opposite side of a beat-up green sedan with a short, plump gentleman who just turned in to approach the shop. I noticed a few other hoopties at the pumps, all unoccupied, and there were a couple of other cars parked up near the station, most likely belonging to the employees, so nothing seemed out of the ordinary. Until I swiped my credit card. The pump rejected my first swipe attempt, which I chalked up to a misread. I swiped again, and the pump read, "Please see attendant." I was annoyed, but we needed gas. I tapped on the window and told my buddy what I was going to do and asked if anyone needed anything. After taking their orders for Gatorade and Marlboro Reds, I walked up to the store to make a mental note of how strange this gas station was. Kind of quiet, especially for one right off the interstate, but it's no matter. As I walked in, though, more weirdness. First thing I noticed is that there were some boxes of chips just left on the floor, like someone was stocking shelves and just quit. As I veered to my right, I noticed immediately that there was no one milling about in this place. With the 6 cars besides my own out there, I felt like I would see someone. Things got even weirder when I realized that there was no one behind the counter, no customers or workers. And then it dawned on me, what happened to that gentleman who was at the pump adjacent to mine? Surely they can't all be in the bathroom. This is where I began to feel this gnawing sensation in my stomach. Something isn't right. I have always been a person who felt like I could always trust my instincts, and those instincts were screaming at me to just get the hell out. I want to run, but I hold back. I would look suspicious booking it out of the gas station that was empty and decide to just play it cool. Natural. Don't let your body language let on to how badly you're freaking out in your head. I was probably inside of this gas station for only a couple of minutes when I left, but I stopped just before exiting to listen for something. Anything. A flushing toilet would have been a good sound, but nothing. As I exit the shop and see my car, I begin to feel dread. It's like that moment in the movie where the hero is about to make it to the end of their trial, but the celebratory fanfare disappears, and in that silence, something comes and strikes them down. I'm about 25 yards from the car when I see this gentleman come out from around the side of the shop opposite of me. This is not the same man as I saw while pumping gas. He was larger and had a peculiar look on his face. The best way I could describe it was like Nick Cage's smile from Face Off before the titular act had occurred. I continued walking towards my car, but when I turned back to look at him, he was now walking towards me with a purpose. At this point, I got the fuck back to the car with increased urgency in my step. And of course, my friend has the door to the car locked like a complete douche clown. There is also the 95-pound golden retriever sitting in my seat. Apparently, my travel companions did not notice how freaked out I was, or the creepy gentleman still walking in my direction. I punched the window and told him to unlock the fucking door, to which he only half rolls down the window to tell me the dog was in my seat and they were afraid she'd jump out when he opened the door. I reached my hand in and threw the dog towards the back seat as hard as I could while my friend is just now realizing how freaked out I am. He started the car and drove off quickly. I took one last look back and see Nick Cage had stopped about a pump away from where we were, still with that same look on his face. We found another gas station further down the road, this time with a ton of people inside and out. After thoroughly creeping out my friends with a story as I pumped gas, we made our way back to the interstate, which meant passing that gas station again. It's been about 15 minutes since we pulled out initially, and we go silent as we notice that those very same cars are still sitting in the same spots where we had left them. After thoroughly freaking out for a few miles, I received a phone call from my credit card company about a $100 charge at a mobile station. The lady on the phone was really helpful in fixing the situation for me, and was as entirely creeped out by the situation as we were. In the end, we made it to LA and had a great vacation, but it still bothers me as to what the hell was going on at this little gas station off the highway, and what the hell was that smiling man's story.